It's nearly 11:30 a.m. Time for Talking Animals on 88.5 FM WMNF in Tampa. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'm really delighted to be bringing you another edition of Talking Animals, kicking off the show, as usual, with an animal song, in this case, a piece from the latest album by Beth Orton called Worms here on WMNF.
Worms don't dance, they haven't got the balls, no matter how they do, it's just you do that song. You go ahead, Kate, to knock at my door. You wanna get all excited, you've never been here before. And now I'm your apple eating heathen, the original sin. You ain't got my faith, so best keep your belief. I have waited forever to love someone. I swear I heard you thank your God that time for having me come along. Chickens don't fly, but they have got the wings. No matter how hard they try, they bump into things. They're all running around like their heads on the ground. They got a wishbone where their backbone should have grown. Now I'm your apple-eating heathen, and your ribs feeling even. You ain't got my faith, so best keep your belief. I have waited forever to love someone. Thank you, God, that time for having me come along. Another intimacy reduced to cruelty. And I had you believe that this was meant to be. And I'm moved for the magic, but you got away with it. That's all.
That's music by Beth Orton with an animal song of sorts called Worms as we ease into today's edition of Talking Animals on 88.5 FM WMNF in Tampa, streaming live on WMNF.org. My name's Duncan Strauss, and I'll be here till noon today with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. As you may know, this is our fourth time on WMNF with Talking Animals, a show I launched in California a few years ago that primarily seeks to learn about animals and animal issues from your phone calls, from news items, emails, assorted other sources. But we're also quite interested in celebrating animals through music, comedy, and other means. We always aim for a spirited balance of those elements. As you can readily glean if you care to visit our website, talkinganimals.net. Indeed, the website offers archives of all our past shows, including our initial three programs on WMNF, featuring singer-songwriter-activist Nellie McKay, Dr. Temple Grandin, internationally renowned expert on both animals and autism, and Captain Paul Watson, a co-founder of Greenpeace, lifelong activist, and uniquely qualified authority on the annual Canadian seal hunt. Today's edition very much extends the show's tradition of speaking with fascinating folks from all walks of animal life, with the conversation we'll have momentarily with our guest, Kat Albrecht, a real-life pet detective, author of The Lost Pet Chronicles, and founder of Pet Hunters International, the first-ever detective academy, which trains pet detective and search dogs to find lost pets. We'll find out much more about her and the seminar she's conducting in Orlando, May 5th through 8th, when Kat Albrecht joins us in a moment here on Talking Animals. We'll also welcome your questions and comments for her. You can call us at 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. Okay, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves animal-oriented comedy. This is Vintage Stuff from Ellen DeGeneres with a piece called Birds Mating on today's Comedy Corner here on WMNF.
This is a weird mating habit. I learned this playing Trivial Pursuit, which is a game that I absolutely hate. I don't know if you hate the game as much. I think stupid people, don't clap, stupid people hate it the most because you're just... trying to save you. Because you're just sitting there, you're waiting. Because you're just waiting for it to be your turn so you can say, I don't know. Danny Kaye, I don't know. You're just guessing anything. I get the question, what is the only animal that mates while going 80 miles an hour? And it is? Yeah. Eagle, the eagle. Yeah, good guesses, though, but thanks for playing. It's Danny Kaye was a bad guess. I realize that now. I've read that somewhere, but it wasn't true. It's the eagle, and this is what they do. This is really how they mate. The male and the female golden eagle both go 3 to 4 miles high. They start going 80 miles an hour, which is incredibly fast, and then they connect. I don't know either. And then they start dropping, and they don't stop dropping until the act is completed. So it's not uncommon that they both fall all the way to the ground, hit the ground, both of them die. That's how committed they are to this. I don't know about you, but if I'm one of these two birds, you're getting close to the ground, I would seriously consider faking it.
All right, that was Ellen DeGeneres and today's Comedy Corner on WM&F with a bit called Birds Mating, taken from her album Taste This. Speaking of funny women, by the way, Margaret Cho, past guest on this show, will be performing this weekend at the Tampa Improv, and I'll be offering a pair of tickets as a prize for Name That Animal Tune later in the program. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals on 88.5 FM, WMNF. The station's website is WMNF.org. The show website is TalkingAnimals.net, where all our past programs are archived. There are pieces written about us, pieces we've written, and more, including a place to sign up for our email list so we can keep you posted on forthcoming guests and more. That's TalkingAnimals.net. It's nearly time to welcome today's guest, Kat Albrecht, so let me quickly outline a few important details about her. As I touched on a few moments ago, Kat is a pet detective, author of The Lost Pet Chronicles, and founder of Pet Hunters International, the first ever detective academy, which trains pet detectives and search dogs to find lost pets. Albrecht's work experience as a police officer, bloodhound handler, search and rescue manager, and crime scene investigator led to her pioneering the field of pet detective work. California-based Pet Hunters International offers occasional training seminars in locations across the U.S., including May 5th through 8th in Orlando. With a quick reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling in 813-239-9663. Let's welcome Kat Albrecht to Talking Animals. Are you there, Kat?
I sure am, Duncan.
Welcome to Talking Animals. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Of course, we want to focus our conversation really on your work as a pet detective, on the book and the training you offer, including, of course, those seminars coming up in Orlando. But to provide some context for those topics, maybe you could just give us kind of the quick nickel tour of your background, your path to pet detective, as it were.
Sure. I was a full-time police officer, also worked as a detective for 2 years, and bloodhound handler and trainer of a cadaver dog, and you know, my focus was in training and using dogs in law enforcement until one day in 1996 my bloodhound AJ escaped and was missing in the woods, and I panicked, but I called another search and rescue dog. It was a golden retriever I had helped to train to track people. In fact, that dog had worked a lot of cases with AJ, tracking missing people, and we scented that golden on AJ's bedding, and she tracked him down in 20 minutes and found him. And that's what gave me the idea, you know, I know how to train dogs to find people. Why don't we train dogs to track lost pets? We're training termite detection dogs, melanoma detection dogs. You know, dogs are being trained to find drugs, bombs, all kinds of objects. Why can't we train cat detection dogs? And so this idea haunted me for 6 months, and I finally decided to take my Weimaraner cadaver dog, Rachel, who I pulled out of retirement, and in her first 4 searches, she found 2 missing cats and 1 missing dog, and it's just changed my life and set me on a new path, and I'm just, my passion and mission is to develop community-based lost pet services. I think, you know, we have so many services for our animals, and yet when your pet is missing, you're on your own.
Sure. Well, a couple things there, Kat. First of all, what would you say to folks whose reaction to some of this is something akin to, okay, I get dogs searching for dogs, but dogs searching for cats? I mean, how does that work? And, you know, are there certain breeds or type of dogs that are, you know, particularly apt at that, and some that maybe aren't really right candidates for that work?
Well, it works quite well, actually. We select dogs that love kitties, ones that were as a puppy, they had a really good experience with a cat or a kitten. that their initial response when we evaluate them is that they get all wiggly and excited. Some of these dogs probably couldn't cohabitate with a cat because they might chase it, but we know through the that careful evaluation that we do that they wouldn't hurt a kitty. And when we work the dogs, we work always work them in a harness and on a lead so that we never, you know, we don't set these dogs loose and allow them to chase a cat. But typically when we do an aggressive physical search for a missing cat, we go yard to yard searching the cat's territory. And if the dogs detect the scent of a live or a deceased cat, they will begin to give body language that the handler can read. And then, you know, it's not like we totally trust that the dogs are going to find the cats because we're using the dog's nose, high-tech equipment, and the training that we've given to the handlers to know how and where to look for a missing cat. And it's really successful.
So it's really a combination of those things
that
ultimately yield where that kitty is. And really, I guess kind of before we get too much further into the conversation, I'm curious, what sort of statistics are available on, you know, lost / missing pets each year? I mean, nationally, you know, or is it by region or how? Is there any way to kind of, you know, come up with any way to quantify this?
You know, there isn't, and that's part of the problem is there's never been any national organization or study that's been done to tell us exactly how many pets are lost and found every year. I mean, I can tell you that I've heard different estimates, 2 to 5 million, but animal shelters are not required to keep these statistics. They do keep statistics on how many strays end up in their shelters and how many of those are euthanized versus how many are reclaimed by their owners. You know, but that doesn't tell us necessarily the picture of how many people have lost a dog or a cat and have never found it or have later found it. But that's one thing that the nonprofit that I founded, Missing Pet Partnership, hopes to get a grant and do research into answering that question as well as studying the patterns of behaviors and the typical distances that lost pets travel. You know, we do this for missing people. We've studied and done research on the analysis of lost person behavior, and what we want to do is develop search and rescue services for missing pets that mirror how, you know, the science that is used to find missing people.
Sure. But anecdotally, just since you've obviously been doing this a while, I mean, do you feel like there's certain either areas of the country or just areas within a given part of a state that experience more or less lost pets? For example, I mean, you know, just in the last several months, I've moved to Florida here, and at least where I live, I'm struck by the dramatically large number of ads, posters, flyers, et cetera, for lost or missing animals compared to where I was in California. Now, maybe that's just, you know, some other set of circumstances as well, but I mean, it's dramatically different.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how to answer that because it hasn't been studied. I know that, you know, we're dealing with dogs and cats. I mean, they're our beloved pets. They're part of our family members, but they're animals. And when a dog escapes, especially a dog escapes from your care, and if it's panicked and afraid, like it's been scared by fireworks or gunshots or thunder, you know, we're expecting a grief-stricken, panicked pet owner to know how to capture the animal that's afraid without using any knowledge of how to use a snappy snare, a humane trap for a dog, or a catch pole, or we use magnet dogs and snappy snares, which is a technique to distract and attract the dog, and a snappy snare is a simple animal capturing tool that's easier to use than a catch pole. It's a device that animal control officers sometimes use. That we know in disaster situations, especially the issue of loose dogs that are out there that oftentimes form packs and are ultimately shot because they can't be caught, can be captured by using a friendly dog that will draw them in and we can quickly capture them. So I know I got off the trail there, but I don't know how to answer that. Pets go lost everywhere.
Sure. No, I just wondered if even just generally in your experience, for example, it might even divide somewhat upon like rural-urban lines a little bit more or less in one area or another. But it sounds like really until that research is really done, it's just all kind of guesswork. Let me just let our listeners know, this is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'm speaking with Kat Albrecht, a real-life pet detective who also trains people to become pet detectives through her academy, Pet Hunters International. If you have a question for Kat, please call us at 813-239-9663. Or email us at dj@wmnf.org. Kat, can you give us a few basic truisms of how to and how not to search for missing pets?
Absolutely. Cats are different than dogs. They're apples and oranges. You know, unlike the typical advice that we see on the Internet or that we hear, which is to place an ad in the paper, post flyers, and look at the animal shelter for your pet, you know, the method that you, the, those, you do want to do those, but the method that you should use to look for a missing cat, the paramount, the way that you need to look for an outdoor access cat that suddenly vanishes, you need to get into your neighbor's yards and get permission to look for your cat. Don't rely on giving them a flyer and asking them to quote unquote look for your cat, because they're not going to get on their stomach and look under their house or under their deck for your cat. And that's the most highly probable location where your cat might be. It might be trapped. It might be injured. It might not be alive. The behavior of an injured or sick cat is that they hide in silence.
Mm-hmm.
Cats are territorial. They don't tend to travel far. They can be chased out of their territory, but they might only be a block or two away. They can be transported by people or climbing into a moving van. There are circumstances. I'm not saying that they can't be found a distance from your home, but the target search area for an outdoor cat that vanishes is within a 5-house radius of your home, in and under everything.
Wow.
An indoor-only cat that escapes outside is a displaced cat that is afraid and hiding in silence, and you can use a baited humane trap to recover that cat. And a dog that escapes is often found by somebody who influences, or they decide whether or not you're going to get that dog back. So posting fluorescent giant poster boards that give a brief information, reward lost dog, white poodle, is what people driving 40 miles an hour need to be able to read. And you can find examples of how to post those type of flyers on our nonprofit website, and that's lostapet.org.
Great, Kat. You want to take a we have a couple of calls here. Would you like to take a call from one of our listeners? Okay.
Absolutely.
Hi, you're on the air with Kat Albrecht. It's WMNF with Talking Animals.
Hi, Kat. I went to your website and I found it really interesting. I lost my cat and recovered the cat, thank goodness. But I just wanted to know, how soon would someone call in your organization for help after a pet goes missing?
You know, we've received emails from within, you know, hours or days up until several weeks. You know, our hope with my organization is through the nonprofit that we give information that's going to help people. And we love when we receive the emails of, I went to your website and I followed your instructions and we got our cat back or our dog back. Thank you so much. That's what we want to see. So with pet hunters, it's the Pet Detective Training Academy, and we list pet detectives with dogs trained to find lost pets that are in different cities across the country. And, you know, we are more of a referral service and training academy, so we don't directly take phone calls, or the people who email us about lost pets, we pretty much refer them to the website and to the other pet detectives. You know, when a cat is missing, it could be that it's injured and needs to get to a vet, and that, you know, a dog gets out, it's at risk of being hit, so you want to be proactive and aggressive in trying to find your pet right away, within hours.
All right, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. Our guest is Pet Detective Kat Albrecht, who's offering seminars in Orlando May 5 through 8. If you have a question or a comment, please call us at 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. So speaking of those seminars in Orlando, Kat, I mean, how hard is it to learn some of the basic principles of being a pet detective? And regarding the seminars, what would someone expect to learn or do if they attended such a seminar?
Yeah, the seminar is a 4-day seminar, so I know it's going to be prohibitive for a lot of people to attend, you know, especially since it's coming up here in early May.
Mm-hmm.
We basically need to spend 4 days in teaching you the science of how and where to look. We teach you the process of deductive reasoning, which is a method that is used by investigators and veterinarians and doctors, and it's how they come up with a diagnosis. It's how to process clues and information using deductive reasoning as a tool, as opposed to just grasping onto any theory. You need to learn how to process clues and information.
Mm-hmm.
We teach you about search probability theory, which is the concept that you're going to have a higher likelihood of recovering a missing person or a missing pet if you only focus your search efforts in the areas where the missing person or missing pet is most likely to be. We teach you about lost behaviors, which include the behavior of cats, the behavior of dogs, how people behave and influence whether or not a missing animal will be reunited with its family. The analysis of physical evidence, I mean, it's how to handle our animal capturing tool, how to approach stray animals. These are just some of the topics.
Wow.
And we also cover how the first day is spent, how to evaluate, and the beginning process of training a dog. This is not a dog training seminar. We do not have you bring your dog to the seminar, but through videos and demonstration on the first day, you'll learn how to go home and whether your dog can be used or you can go out and evaluate another dog to use for this. And answering your question earlier, any breed can be used for this.
Yeah.
There are limitations on certain breeds, but we use mixed breeds, terriers, labs, everything.
Wow.
Or collies, anything. It's It's the temperament and drive of the dog. Dogs that love cats or love to play with dogs or will do anything for a treat are potential candidates. For
cool. Well, I have a couple more questions about that, but actually we have a couple callers here. Let's take a few more if you don't mind, Kat.
Okay, sure.
Hi, you're on WNNF with Kat Albrecht.
Oh, hi there. I was curious to see how useful Kat thinks those little chips are in cats.
Microchipping?
Microchipping, absolutely. All my dogs and all my cats are microchipped. And even my indoor-only cats have collars with tags because people think, oh, well, my dog never leaves me or my cat never I never let my cat outside, so I don't need to put a collar. Wrong. You never know when your house will be burglarized and you come home and find your door open and your animal gone. The chips, maybe not all vets are chipping and maybe not all shelters are scanning, but I'm a big advocate on chipping every animal that you have because a microchip is putting a serial number identification in your animal that if somebody ever claims that that's their animal and it actually belongs to you, you can scan that with a law enforcement officer and, you know, almost treating your animal like property, which we don't want to do, but in the case of getting your animal back, you want to be able to prove that it's your animal, so chip your animal.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for the call. Let's take another caller. This is WMNF. You're on with Kat Albrecht.
Hello.
Hello.
Is this me?
Yeah, it sure is. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, great information. What you just said really struck home with me. We were burglarized, and wow. When we came home, the door was open, and our cat was gone. Haven't seen her since.
How long have you been missing?
This was several years back.
Okay.
But what I called you about this time, while I was on hold, I heard that, and I just thought, wow, she's absolutely right about that with the cat. But we found I was walking my beagle, and this little Rottweiler puppy followed me home. And I live in Lakeland, so I want to kind of put a shout out. We put this out in the paper that we found this puppy, and we've had some calls, but they weren't for this dog. We didn't put actually what kind of puppy it was in the paper because we wanted to get it to the rightful owner and just not someone calling saying, oh, yeah, that's my dog.
Sure.
You know, so we're kind of ambiguous about it. We asked some questions to try to fill them out. But we have this puppy and it's followed me home and we're kind of been stuck with it for the last 3 weeks. And do you have more suggestions?
I sure do. It's very possible that the people who lost the puppy didn't think to go and look in the classifieds and just haven't seen your ad, or maybe they've given up. Maybe they gave up after the first 3 days or the first week, which is common. In the location, the exact location where the puppy started following you and in the major intersections around that area, post a giant fluorescent poster board. You can get these at Office Max or different stores. They're like 18 inches by 22 inches, I believe. You can go to lostapet.org and see the exact dimensions and examples of how to place reward lost dogs. You should put a giant poster and in 5-inch black giant letters write found black puppy and then put the date or 3 weeks ago or something like that. And then put your phone number on it in smaller letters. If people lost a black puppy, they'll pull over and get your phone number. So don't make the phone number so large. We did this when we found a tan terrier mutt mix that ran out in a roadway. We posted a giant poster that said found tiny tan terrier and our phone number in smaller letters, and we got a call within 3 hours. So somebody, whoever lost the puppy, they may have given up, but if you put a highly visible 3-word message, found black puppy, you'll hopefully maybe get a call.
Awesome information. Well, if anyone's listening in Lakeland, we found a black puppy, and can I leave my number or something maybe since I'm on the air?
Well, that's up to you. If you want to give it over the air, usually that's sort of a...
I can give a cell phone number out. Yeah,
okay, let's just do it quickly if you wouldn't mind, caller.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, not a problem. The number is 863-661-2435, and again, it's black puppy, and it was about 3 weeks ago we found it in the North Lakeland area. Thank you. Great show, and thanks for taking
thanks
my
for
call.
Calling. Let's hope that puppy gets reunited with his family there. Kat, a couple more quick things. We're just nearing the end of our time, but back to the seminars in Orlando. First of all, I just want to let people know to visit Pet Hunters International website, pethunters.com, to find out more. And also, for those who think they might be interested in attending the Orlando seminars, one of the prizes we'll be offering momentarily in our Name That Animal Tune contest is a significant discount on one seminar enrollment. So that's something to keep in mind. But also, here's my question in terms of what rights or privileges does being trained by the academy confer? I mean, is one ultimately licensed in a way that affects their ability to offer services to a private party or through the police department, or can you charge?
Through Pet Hunters, you're not licensed. You're basically trained and certified. You're proven through the training and through the testing that you'll have to pass a written examination, and you have to be signed off on the use of some animal capturing equipment. Basically, it's opening the door then for you to either offer these services through a rescue group, an animal shelter, a Missing Pet Partnership, the nonprofit that I founded, plans to partner with animal shelters, rescue groups, and nonprofits to form community-based lost pet rescue teams using volunteers. We still expect that this will be a fee-based service, but that organizations will use this as a means to raise donations to help them to spay, neuter animals and vet care and food for the animals that they're helping to rescue through their rescue groups. But it also enables you to start a part-time business if you're a pet sitter, vet tech, or, you want to work with animals. We don't foresee this as being a full-time business that you'll be able to support yourself, because nobody's really heard of it. It's very new. It is cutting edge. We do expect there's going to be a huge demand for this. There is a national pet detective company that's forming that will be hiring people some people who have attended our class may have the chance of becoming a full-time pet detective, but there's not going to be a ton of them. But, so there's different opportunities.
Sure.
It's just great. You can use this training in disaster animal work, and we just want to work on the overpet population through reuniting lost pets. The strays that end up in our shelter are oftentimes actually people's beloved lost pets that they want back, and we want to work on that angle of helping to eliminate the problems in shelters.
Okay, Kat. Well, that sounds fantastic. Unfortunately, we have kind of reached the end of our time here. I'm sorry we didn't get to a lot of the other calls, but again, we'll give the website information again. But one quick question, Kat. I know that the Today Show was preparing a profile on you and Pet Hunters. Has that aired yet, or is that still to air?
You know, my life just seems to be one disappointment after another, but no, they came out and filmed us, and then, they filmed us in early February,
mm-hmm.
and then they just haven't aired the segment, and we were really excited. In fact, I made the mistake of believing that, the seminars, that when people heard about this, people would be fighting to get into my seminars, and
yeah.
they just haven't, the last we heard was they're just having a hard time convincing the people in New York to run the story on pet detectives, and so...
Yeah.
Well, that could change,
and that something can happen where it just suddenly gets back on the fast track.
Yeah.
So we'll hope for that. So, all right, Kat. Well, thanks again for joining us on Talking Animals. And again, one last time, the book is The Lost Pet Chronicles. The organization is Pet Hunters International, which is conducting seminars again in Orlando, May 5th through 8th. And for more information, the website is Pet Hunters International. Thanks, Kat.
PetHunters.com.
PetHunters.com is the website. Okay, I'm Duncan Strauss, and you're listening to Talking Animals on WMNF. The show website is talkinganimals.net, which I hope you'll visit to sign up for our email list, check out our archive shows, make suggestions for future guests or topics, check out written pieces, photos, and more. That's talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune, pretty much like any version of Name That Tune you'd care to mention, except that in this game, the tunes are always animal-related. There'll be a prize, like an autographed copy of Kat Albrecht's book, The Lost Pet Chronicles, or a serious discount on the seminar she's offering in Orlando, May 5th through 8th, or a pair of tickets to see Margaret Cho, a past guest on Talking Animals, for the first show this Friday at the Tampa Improv, to the first person who calls in 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies the song playing now. It's Name That Animal Tune on WMNF. Hi, can you name that animal tune? Hi, can you name that animal tune?
Yes, it's a sheep.
That's right, that's correct. What's your name?
Patrick.
Okay, Patrick, can I put you back on hold and we'll take your information and see which prize you'd like when we just finish off the show, and I'll talk to you off the air.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks. All right, got a lot of calls on that one. Sorry, Patrick was the winner, the first one to call in. So we've just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals. Before we go, I want to quickly hit an important news item, which is from the petition site about downlisting the Florida manatee. I don't have time at this point to read the whole thing, but basically the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission is recommending downlisting from endangered to threatened status the manatees. And last year was the second highest manatee mortality rate on record. There's all kinds of other important statistics that I don't have time to give you now, but here's what I'd like to recommend you do is just go to the petitionsite.com/takeaction, and the specific petition is 847-148-8803. So you go to the petitionsite.com/takeaction/8471-48803. And this will go to good old Jeb Bush, and you can email me, talkinganimals@AOL.com, for that link or more information. So I want to thank Rob Loray and others at WMNF for the opportunity to present Talking Animals today and now monthly here on WMNF. The second Wednesday of each month, so we'll be back May 10th, June 14th, July 12th, I think you understand, so on. Hope you'll join me next time. And meanwhile, please visit our website, talkinganimals.net, and send an email to talkinganimals@AOL.com. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. I'm closing today's show out, as always, with an animal song. This is Brad Meldow's version of Blackbird. This should take us right up to the top of the hour in NPR News, followed by Democracy Now! So, as always, lots to stay tuned for on 88.5 FM WMNF in Tampa. We'll catch you again May 10th on Talking Animals.
Just a couple of days after Seymour Hersh reported that the U.S. has intensified planning for a possible air attack against Iran, Iran announced that it succeeded in enriching uranium. On today's Fresh Air, we talk with Hersh about his story in this week's New Yorker on military plans the Bush administration is considering to stop Iran from developing a nuclear weapon. Also, we talk with director Mary Harron about her new movie, The Notorious Betty Page. It's based on the life of the 50s pinup queen, who has been described as the first official pinup of the bondage scene. Page's life was filled with mysteries and contradictions. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice has condemned Iran's uranium enrichment activity as unacceptable. Speaking at the State Department, she said the United Nations Security Council will have to decide what to do about Iran.
Iran has been offered many opportunities to negotiate in good faith by the Europeans, by the Russians. They've never taken those opportunities. They had a presidential statement that reinforced those requirements. The Iranians have not reacted to that. And so, yes, when we were consulting now and when the Security Council reconvenes, I think it will be time for action.
Yesterday, Iran's president announced his country has defied the United Nations and started enriching uranium. He insists this is for peaceful purposes. He says Iran will go ahead with a larger enrichment program.